listeners, for your continued support for our radio station. If you haven't yet made your commitment to non-commercial community radio, you can still donate by browsing on over to our website, kboo.fm, and clicking on the tip jar.
KBOO wants you. Yes, you. Are you excited about the new possibilities for local independent media? Are you ready to help KBOO reach out and grow stronger in the community? We're looking for candidates for KBOO's board of directors, and we've extended our search through July 31st. So if you'd like to share your skills with the people who share your values, download a copy of our board candidate package at kboo.fm. Or you can pick up a copy at the station during business hours. We're located at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. July 31st, so don't delay. And we look forward to seeing more of you at KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Drones in Oregon, Myths, Facts, and Futures, a community forum about the use of drones. This community forum on the use of drones will take place Thursday, August 7th from 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, Southwest 12th and Salmon in Portland. Speakers include retired Army Colonel Ann Wright, Brian Whiteside, Peter Lumsdaine, and Oregon State Representative Jennifer Williamson. Again, that's Drones in Oregon, a community forum on Thursday, August 7th at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. More information at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, July 31st, 2014. Thursday. And you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Today's guest is Shimona Sharoni. She is a professor of gender and women's studies at the State University of New York at Plattsburgh, and the author of Gender and the Israeli-Palestinian Conflict, The Politics of Women's Resistance. She just wrote a piece, A Feminist Perspective on Israeli Aggression. We're going to be speaking with Shimona very shortly. We have, of course, as always, a number of headlines, quite a number of headlines this morning. And just another, I want to pick up where we left off yesterday. I listened this morning on, off and on, I have to admit, to a broadcast on National Public Radio, on OPB, on a show called A Takeaway, which is syndicated nationally. And they had a long, long interview with an Israeli spokesperson who liberally dipped into a dictionary. It's a PR booklet. It's 112 pages of booklets marked not for distribution or publication. It's easy to see why. This is the Luntz, as we all know it. The Luntz Report is officially titled Israeli Projects 2009 Global Language Dictionary. It was leaked almost immediately to Newsweek Online, but its true importance hasn't really been appreciated until right now. Everybody should read it, actually, especially journalists. Because if you don't read it, it's impossible to translate the lies. The way that Israelis manipulate language to distort the actual facts on the ground, it, is full of meaty advice about how people they should shape answers for different audiences. For example, the study says Americans agree that Israel has a right to defensible borders, but it does you no good to define exactly what those borders should be. Avoid talking about borders in terms of free or post. See, this booklet is absolutely extraordinary, and it has been used more so than ever before right now. If you listen to any interview with any voice speaking on behalf of Israel, you will find traces of the dictionary. I would love to talk more about it. I'm quite certain that Simona is well equipped to discuss this odious little pamphlet. Good morning, Simona. Thank you for being with us. I really appreciate
you
joining.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, the role of women in the conflict has not been reported on. The reporting, as always, in the U.S. has been dismal and has relied almost exclusively, the U.S. media has reported uncritically using the language of this dictionary, which of course distorts facts. They say that as soon as they know whether or not a rocket hit the school, then they would apologize. Well, come on, everybody knows that a rocket hit a school, killing many, but what was it, 15 people?
Actually, the body and we know now that you know, the recent school that was hit, there were 6 UNRWA schools that acted as shelters. The moment they were designated shelters, UNRWA officials notified the Israeli government and military of the exact location of the school. The latest school that was hit yesterday morning, there were 17 notifications sent with the exact number of people taking shelter in the school and a warning that they are 100% civilians. So, you know, you kind of deconstructed the propaganda. Having lived in Israel for 27 years, served in the military, and for a long time accepted that propaganda as the truth, I could see through the lies. I don't need to read the book. What's really outrageous is that Israel is getting away with this as we watch a genocide unfolding in front of our eyes, both in the mainstream media and on social media. So, you know, you asked about women. When over 70% of the casualties are civilians, women bear the brunt of dealing with both the unfolding genocide and its aftermath. And the absence of women's voices from the media, both as impacted by the conflict and as expert, is mind-boggling because social media is full of women's accounts, blogs of women in Gaza, updates from women in Gaza, gendered analysis of the conflict and the language used to describe it. But mainstream media continues to feature generals and official politicians, both U.S. and Israeli, to promote their version of what's happening on the ground.
Yeah, that's a discrepancy. That's why I wanted to talk with you and get your voice on the air, because that baffles me. Social media, that is where I, you know, what I've been relying on to find out what's actually like there, what the situation is on the ground. That what it's we call it in the environmental area, ground truthing. And ground truthing in a war zone has been the exclusive domain of Palestinian women in Gaza, yet I have not heard a single female voice on mainstream media. Not one. Has there been any? Have any women been allowed to share their views, their interpretation, what it's like for them to be in Gaza, which, of course, is the world was a before this started, the world's biggest concentration camp. What can you talk a bit more about what women's role has been throughout the conflict and the casualties? I mean, The International Middle East Media Center every day lists the names, which I think is important. I think we should read all the names from time to time to remind ourselves these are people with families and children and lives and mothers and fathers, homes, memories, all of the things. I mean, maybe some tiny knickknack sitting on a shelf that's dear to them. Everything, the walls, the roof, it's all gone. That's what I want to hear you. Please talk about what the women are saying.
You know, I mean, that's your framing is so important. I saw yesterday, I have a 13-year-old daughter. Yesterday I saw an account of an Israeli soldier who shot a 13-year-old and then went to so-called confirm the kill and basically sprayed her little body with bullets. And I look at it and think this could have been my child had I lived in Gaza and not who I am. And every story that comes out, there's a blog this morning of a Palestinian mother in Gaza with three kids that had to make a decision every night whether to huddle with all her kids in one room and risk that all of them will die or have them sleep in different rooms. And because they were all so scared, they ended up taking the risk and living, you know, spending a night in one room, and they're all still alive, thankfully. But that's not the case of 70 families that were killed, entire families that, you know, are no more. And you know, there's no excuse. It's really a genocide. Those of us who have used this word from the beginning, when it became clear that there is an indiscriminate targeting of civilian population, and it doesn't matter how you justify it, it's inexcusable. It's a war crime, and the fact that it continues to happen, you know, it's the 25th day today. With casualties mounting, I think there were 1,368 last night. I'm sure it's over, surpassed 1,400. The main problem this morning for women and their population generally is that the major power plant in Gaza was hit about 14 hours ago. And means that all the accounts that I was getting via social media from people on the ground in Gaza have stopped because 99.9% of the people are in complete darkness. So that presents additional challenges for women and everyone else when it comes to kids, for example, kids with asthma that have no access. I mean, the hospitals have been at max capacity with no resources. I think the main struggle for women is survival and protecting their family and trying to find safety. It's kind of an impossible project. I had to respond this morning to questions from a mainstream feminist who framed her questions. They were all based on Israeli propaganda. And while it was really unsettling, I felt that it was important because it was, you know, one of the questions was, wouldn't women be better off under Israeli rule than under Hamas? And this was, I mean, she really asked that. And I had to say, you know, Hamas is a creation of the State of Israel. It did not exist prior to the first Palestinian uprising in 1987, so context is important. And Hamas emerged because Israel destroyed all the factions of the PLO that had a very progressive agenda when it comes to gender equality and the basic tenets of democracy. Israel was not interested in letting that leadership exist, vision of a democratic society, because it undermines that frame that they have of presenting Israel as the only democracy in the Middle East and using gay rights and human rights as a way to play it up. So, you know, I think that that's really a problem there.
Before we let you go, we've got about 30 seconds left to go. Could you mention some of the blogs that you would recommend that listeners go to understand what women are suffering through and what their role, their very courageous role has been? What would you suggest?
You know, for historical analysis, I mean, my book is now dated, but it covers some of the issues that I mentioned, covers the history and the role of Palestinian women at the forefront of the struggle for just and lasting peace and their counterparts, the Women's Solidarity Movement in Israel, and it's called Gender and the Israeli-Palestinian Conflict, the Politics of Women's Resistance, and I'm currently working on more or less a sequel that brings us up to date. What I could do is I could compile, there is a list of some more recent publications that are written by most of them by Palestinian women. There's a book that came out of Beer Sheva University that details the work on the ground post-Oslo Accords by Palestinian women
for just a moment. We're out of time. The next show is coming up.
I will compile the list and send it to you, and you could put it on as a link.
We'll be up on the website for people to go and refer to. And that's an amazing gift to us from you. Thank you so much. And it's also a gift to speak to you today and share your voice and get your voice on the air. This has been a Cascadia for Thursday, July 31st, 2014. Rock Bergeron, engineer of the show today. Thanks for that, Rock. Kathleen Stevenson is the KVOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.